Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to be with you on this Thursday. We're going to talk television today. And it is great, at least on a one-day basis, to have Kevin Herr back.
How are you, my friend?
Great to hear you. How's the world of digital treating you?
All ones and zeros. That's a digital joke.
So we haven't sold anything. All right.
That's okay. A digital joke. That's, you know, it's I've turned into a digital sense of humor. I'm either on or off, and most times off.
This is a day that in the music world is a sad one with the passing of Prince today, who died in his home in Minnesota at the age of 57 today. He evidently either had severe flu, pneumonia, something. He had postponed or canceled the show just last week and then went out and did a show to show his fans he was okay 5 days ago and then died this morning. Obviously, they have not told us what the cause of death happens to be, but it's been speculated that he either had severe flu, pneumonia, but we'll have to find out. But he was only 57 years old, is a seven-time Grammy Award winner, and was an innovator in many ways.
What year was he the halftime performance of the Super Bowl?
I don't know.
I know he did one.
I do not know.
I just don't remember which Super Bowl slash year it was.
I don't know which one it was. But
oh, here it is. 2007, Steve.
Okay. So, obviously, for the people who loved his music and for those who appreciated the innovator he happened to be, it's a very sad day and a shocking day. He's only 57 years old, for goodness sakes. 57 years old. And to have this happen is obviously something that those who are fans of his and fans of his music and those who just enjoy music, period, are in a state of shock right now as to the death of Prince today at the age of 57. Steve Samsel is going to join us today. We're going to talk television today. We're going to talk about money, which Kevin has already told us over the years, over the 5 years of the show, is the root evil of sports.
My feeling has not changed on that.
Yet, how does it exist?
And that's the catch-22.
And, the business part of it is, in all seriousness, I mean, Kevin doesn't like the business part of it, all right? And that's not a joke. We're not kidding around here. Kevin does not like the business part of it. I think that's safe to say, right?
Oh, absolutely, because it ruins the opportunity to watch a guy that you like play with your favorite team forever because of the money. That's just one example.
Yet, Fran Fischer passed away, May 14th last year, so we're coming up on the one-year anniversary of that. When Fran Fischer was in his heyday, although some would say maybe the heyday was in part with George Paterno in the 90s, but Fran in the 70s, with Jim Tarman in particular, keep in mind that Fran was the lifeline for Penn State football to many fans. Why? Well, he was the lifeline to many fans because the games weren't on TV. Penn State would have, out of an 11-game season, 10 regular season games and then a bowl game, in an 11-game season, Penn State would have one, maybe two games on TV and the bowl game. That was it. Everything else was on radio. Now every game is on TV. Now you as the fan get a chance to see it, and that's because of the money that's involved in it. We'll talk to Steve Samsel about the six-year, $1.5 billion deal that evidently is on the table to be signed between Fox and Fox Sports 1 and the Big Ten for 25 football games and 50 basketball games and Tier 1 rights. The other half still has to be sold. But this is the avenue. You know, there's a catch-22 with this now. How many times have we heard over the years that television, having every game on television, will drive down attendance? And there has been a little bit of an effect on attendance in some areas. It's put more pressure on everybody to win because that's going to keep everybody going to games. A lot more pressure to win. I mean, it's pressure to win anyway. But when it comes to attendance, there's a lot of pressure to keep on winning because that is the hook marketing-wise to get people to go. Tennessee, for example, I mean, a lot of what's the pressure like on Butch Jones? They have a 102,000-seat stadium, Neyland Stadium. And attendance 2 years ago dropped down to an average, even though it's a great average, of 88,000 per game. So you're playing to an average of 14,000. But of those 14,000 who weren't going to the games had access to watch every Tennessee game. So times have definitely changed, and the cord cutters, of course, are there. The cord cutting has happened in dramatic numbers across the board. Dramatic numbers. When you're talking going from 90,000 subscribers down to 82 or 81, that's a 10% drop. Of those who now watch on their devices, I mean, I will watch a game when I'm in transit on my device. I did watch a bowl game on my device. It was, and I remember the day, it was December 19th. I had done the Drexel game. And we were staying in Philadelphia because we're going to leave for Las Vegas the next morning to do the next leg of the road trip. They're going to play Colorado next out in the tournament at the Orleans Arena. And so I went back to the hotel, and ESPN had a bowl game on, and then there was the Arizona Bowl going on between Nevada and Colorado State, and that was only being streamed. And so I had that on my iPad while watching the game on the other game on TV because I was interested to see a little bit of each game. A lot of people are using their devices now to watch games. And people are busy. For example, you know, you may be out there on a Saturday coaching your youth soccer team, boys, girls, whatever. And when it's over with and everybody's getting ready to go, you may catch a little bit of the game on your device while you're waiting for everybody to pack up and go. Just see what the score is, what's going on, and so forth, before you turn on WKOK and listen to whatever game is that we have at the time, most especially probably Penn State. But the business of sports has cut into Kevin deeply. There are no Mike Schmidts anymore, Kevin.
No. No, they're not. For many different reasons, but yeah, you're absolutely right.
Well, but there's still some out there. Mariano Rivera played his entire career with the Yankees. Derek Jeter played his entire career with the Yankees. Jorge Posada played his entire career with the Yankees. Now, I know he started his career with the Twins, but let's face it, the last dozen years, David Ortiz has played the entire time with the Red Sox.
It's just, it's tough when you see all, I mean, and don't get me wrong, I'm not complaining that they jump ship for money. I mean, let's face it. You know, you have to provide for your family. I get that. I see the bigger picture of it. It's just a shame that it has gotten where it has, where the money is so obnoxious now, it's really, you know, caused guys to just literally jump for the check. I always think back to, remember the movie Babe? What was the one of the other characters in there? Jumpin' Jim. He jumps contracts. I mean, that's what it seems like anymore. Is all these guys are jumping gyms when the opportunity comes up, contract gone, and it's get me more money first, or I'm going somewhere else.
But you have to understand the history of this a bit. One year, Joe DiMaggio had a year where he hit over 300, he hit over 20 home runs, he drove in about 100 runs, whatever. And it was slightly less than the hitting 320, hitting 30 home runs, and driving in 120 runs. And the Yankees wanted to give him a $5,000 pay cut. And Joe DiMaggio had no recourse except to either hold out or accept the deal. Well, he held out and he finally got, I think, the same money he got the year before, something like that. Because of the reserve clause, nobody could change teams. So while you, the fan, are sitting there saying, hey, it's great, we get Mickey Mantle every year unless we trade him.
Which has the better control?
Is that a way to run a business?
No, I agree. The owners, to a point in history, the owners definitely brought it upon themselves. You can go back in even into the Black Sox scandal and the examples of, poor ownership taking care of their players, that actually may have caused that. But which sport has the best control of it? Would it be baseball with the way they're doing their luxury tax, or is it football with the way they have the salary cap?
That's a really good question. Each one has negatives to it. I mean, baseball is completely out of control with you can offer anything you want, whatever you want. So you have to make certain decisions. I always go back to the Albert Pujols decision that the Cardinals made. Pujols ended up signing a 10-year, $225 million deal with the Angels. Now, nobody, Angels ownership and management was not locked in a room and told they couldn't come out until they gave him 10 years, $225 million. They freely agreed of their own free will to give him $225 million over 10 years. The Cardinals elected not to match that because they said, look, we don't want to be beholden to one player at $22.5 million a year, especially over 10 years. What happens to you? You get older. Well, the Cardinals' theory was we can put that money into two or possibly three players every year and balance our roster out and give us a better chance of winning instead of pouring it into one. And that was their theory as to what to do. The NFL has a salary cap, but they have for the most part, they announce meaningless contracts for the most part. We're going to sign them to a 7-year, $90 million deal. But it really is not a 7-year, $90 million deal. Everything is about what the guaranteed money is. And if the guaranteed money is over 4 years, the last 3 years, you have to make the team to get the money. They can cut you in those final 3 years, and you will get zero. So each one has its pluses and minuses. There's obviously more money flowing than ever. NBA has the max contract. All right, I have that. That's why LeBron James has been signing 2-year contracts. And he's been opting out after year one each time because every time he opts out, he gets a bigger max contract because the collective bargaining agreement changes that. And the NBA has all the, even though Major League Baseball has its collective bargaining agreement running out at the end of this year, I believe the NBA's runs out next year. And that one is going to be hotly contested. And the NBA, which thinks it's hotter than hot right now, and ESPN, which thinks the NBA's hotter than hot right now, take my word, they lock out, and you will find out how they're not quite as hot as they think they are.
You will actually be able to hear television sets turning off from the NBA at that point.
They won't care. People won't care. They won't care. That's why they've got to be smart about what they're doing. And I know Michelle Roberts has already thrown down the gauntlet in some way. She's the head of the NBA Players Association. But you have to be smart. Both sides have to be smart to work together with one another And they should be negotiating now to work together, saying, look, what's best for the next 10 years of the league for ownership and for players, where each one benefits along the way? And neither side has to draw a line in the sand to do that. Because as hot as they think they are, I've believed for a long time that the NBA has a what I would call a fragile heat. Having LeBron's been great, having Curry's been great, but if it disappeared from TV screens, there would not be depression across the land. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. Prince was 57 years old, passing away today. They don't know what caused it, although they were talking about flu, pneumonia, as to why he had canceled shows. He'd been very sick in the last, couple weeks. But more on that in the news bottom of the hour. Josh Getzlaf, we're going to talk about the Penguins and the Rangers coming up. That'll be tonight, Madison Square Garden. Steve Samsel on the Big Ten Fox TV deal at 4:06. We have a lot going on today on the show. Kevin's back on the show. Give us a call at 800-795-9565. Welcome Kevin back. That's 800-795-9565.
Are the phones working?
That's 800-795-9565. Give us a call. 800-795-9565. Welcome home. No.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Humbles Wharf. This day in sports history, then Brandon Gowden from BleedingGreenNation.com. Steve Samsel next half hour. On this date in 1970, the great sportscaster Kurt Gowdy became the first sports broadcaster to receive the George Foster Peabody Award for achievement in radio and television. At that time in 1970, Kurt Gowdy was broadcasting the Super Bowl, the World Series, and the Final Four. And also on this date in 1980, Rosie Ruiz won the Boston Marathon. She did it in a near record time of 2 hours, 31 minutes, and 56 seconds. Here's the problem. After an investigation, she was stripped of the title because evidence showed she didn't run the race. In fact, it shows that she entered the race at Cleveland Circle. I can tell you Cleveland Circle is less than a mile away from the finish line. To show you how out of shape she was, she appeared to be completely gassed in the mile that she ran and looked like she ran the 26 miles, 385 yards.
I can relate to that.
I know for years you've complained about the 385 yards, let alone the 26 miles. And in 1984, David Palmer of the Expos pitched the fourth shortened perfect game in the majors. The game was called due to rain after five innings. He made 57 pitches. Those games were all wiped off the record books. Now, it's a win for him, but it no longer is in the books as a perfect game. Even Harvey Haddix, who went 12 perfect innings against the Milwaukee Braves, maybe the greatest single-night pitching performance ever. 36 up, 36 down. Nope, not a no-hitter. Not a perfect game. He lost it in the 13th inning. Now, maybe if the Pirates had scored, it would have lessened the pain. Brandon Gouten from BleedingGreenNation.com joins us. Brandon, how are you today?
I'm holding up okay. How are you guys?
All right. If I were to say that the Eagles' target is Carson Wentz, would I be correct?
I don't think you would be wrong. I think he's clearly the guy that is going to be there at number two. I think you look at Los Angeles and what they're doing, new city, new market, and they need a starting quarterback right now, and they don't have one unless they're going into Los Angeles with Case Keenum, but I don't think that's what they really want to do. I don't think Carson Wentz is the most pro-ready prospect. I think that's Goff, and I think for the Eagles, it doesn't matter that Wentz isn't as pro-ready because they have the luxury of sitting him behind Chase Daniel and Sam Bradford.
It seems like we've seen something play out here. Chip Kelly was let go before the finale against the Giants. Then the next step in all of this was to hire Doug Peterson and then get the front office set. Then the next step was to sign Sam Bradford, but they only did so in a two-year deal, which then led to this step. Does that all make sense to you as to actually there was some planning behind how this all played out?
I think, I believe Howie Roseman when he says that they really want to invest in quarterbacks. I mean, this is a franchise that hasn't had a franchise quarterback since Donovan McNabb. And they've tried a lot of things. They've tried Michael Vick. They've tried Kevin Cobb. They've tried Nick Foles, Sam Bradford, you name it. So I think, they're trying to put their eggs in multiple baskets here. I think, they have Sam Bradford for this year. If he plays well, then great. Then they can trade him. They can make him their guy. If not, they can lean on the rookie that they're going to trade up for. And then Chase Daniel's in the mix there, too. I don't think it can hurt to invest this much in quarterback when it's just the most important position in all of sports.
Well, no offense, but if Chase Daniel ends up being your quarterback for an extended period of time, you got trouble. I'm not kidding about that. I mean, I'm not putting him down here. He's not a starting NFL quarterback. So the guy they're picking has got to be that starting NFL quarterback. It's got to be.
Yeah, it is, and it's going to be eventually. At least you would think. I mean, it's not going to be right away. Obviously, like we said, Bradford's here, and maybe even next year, it's a battle between the rookie and Daniel, with probably the rookie winning at that point. But obviously, you want to push him and not just give him the job. I think whoever comes in here, it's a huge pick for this regime because you look at Howie Roseman. And I think he's dodged a lot of the blame that's happened in the past. Jeffrey Lurie kind of absolved him of Andy Reid's mistakes and kept him around. And he's still been around here now, 6 years later after taking over as general manager. And then Doug Peterson, obviously. So if these guys, if these guys don't get the pick right, I mean, they're going to be gone. This is really the make or break move for them.
They give up picks number 8, 77, and 100 this year. A first next year, and a second in 18. So this is an expensive move. What parts of the football team take a hit because they don't have three of the top 100 picks any longer?
Yeah, they had 4, actually, in the top 100. And, like we said, now it's down to 2 in the top 79. So it's rough, and obviously one of those is going to be the quarterback. The other one in the third round. The Eagles really need to draft an offensive lineman still because they have one of the oldest offensive lines in the NFL. Jason Peters, this is probably his last season. He's going to be 36 after this year, so he's probably at the end of the road. And, the offensive line needs help. They need a running back. They really don't have a reliable starting running back they can count on. You know, Ryan Matthews is a guy who's talented, but he's injured. He gets injured a lot, and he fumbles. Wide receiver, also still a big need. So there are areas on the team, especially in offense, that the Eagles still have to address. You know, it's going to be really critical for them to try to find some gems with those late-round picks.
All right, so let's get to Carson Wentz, because I know that Greg Cosell of NFL Films, when he has broken down Carson Wentz, loves him. And, in fact, gives you the impression he does not think it is close between he and Goff. That Goff's fine, but Wentz is superior. When you've looked at the two yourself, because obviously you're in a position now thinking of where the Eagles going, what's the difference between the two, in your opinion, when you've looked at it?
Well, I think Cosell even went as far to say that he thinks Wentz is more talented than Marcus Mariota and Jameis Winston. You know, there's been a lot of talk about how, yes, the top two quarterbacks this year haven't been as good as those guys. So for him to praise him like that, I mean, yeah, that's a lot of high praise. And you know, when I look at these guys, I see what others see, and that I think Goff is probably more ready to play now, because I think he has that more experience, and you can talk about the system he played in and the kind of opponents he played against, Division One, tough competition. And, you know, you look at Carson Wentz, and it's not the same. The smaller sample size, lower level of competition. So I think the difference there is that you see Goff as the pro-ready guy, kind of a lower floor, or a higher floor, if you will, whereas Carson Wentz is kind of a little bit more boom or bust. I think he kind of has more traits to be successful than Goff in the long run. But in the short term, you know, he's not a guy you might be able to count on right away.
Yeah, the level of competition is something that does come into play here. Because I know a lot of people, look, North Dakota State, they beat Kansas. Do you know how bad Kansas is? I mean, seriously. I mean they dragged down everybody's RPI. I mean, they even dragged down North Dakota State. They even dragged down North Dakota State's RPI in FCS. But when he went to the Senior Bowl and was against comparable competition, he shined. And not only that, my understanding is pre-snap, he's pretty good. He may not be Christian Hackenberg good pre-snap, but he's actually pretty good from what I understand. How important is that part for these guys, in especially a guy like Doug Peterson? How important is that factor? You know,
I think this guy's
cable ready.
I really think that is important, because, you know, you look at what Carson Wentz has been able to do, and we talk about level of competition, and that's a negative thing. But then you look at the fact that he's been able to kind of control the offense on his own and kind of do some things that are more pro-style elements. And, you know, I think that helps with the transition. I think, you know, he comes in here with – and this isn't like – for as much as this is a guy we're saying who isn't necessarily pro-ready and that the Eagles have given up a lot for him, you know, I think it's a guy who still comes in here and will be pro-ready once he gets the coaching from guys like Doug Peterson, Frank Reich, John DeFilippo. And, you know, I think there's potential there. I think there's traits there to be tapped into.
Well, they're throwing all the eggs into the basket. You know, you mentioned offensive line's got to be their next play. In the third round, what about the later rounds? What are some areas in the later rounds, Brandon, they're going to have to really consider?
Yeah, they pretty much have to draft a running back. Just like I said, you just can't count on Ryan Matthews and Darren Sproles as just full-time guys, because Matthews gets hurt, and Sproles, I think, will be 34 after this season, and he's on the last year of his deal anyway, and he's really never been a full-time running back anyway. So if Matthews did go down, Sproles would be your starter. So you pretty much have to draft a running back at some point. You pretty much have to get another receiver. The Eagles are looking for kind of speed guys. They've been looking at like a Colby Listenbee of TCU and guys like that. You know, guys who aren't necessarily the most talented guys, who are obviously going to go early on because they won't have those picks. But I think they're looking for guys with a certain skill set, and that's kind of the speed element that they haven't had since the days of DeSean Jackson and Jeremy Maclin, guys who can stretch the field. So I think they're looking for that still. We still need depth at areas like linebacker and defensive line. You know, those are guys you can get later on anyway, since you're looking for backups at those positions. It's not like they need new starters. But there are a lot of areas still here to address.
How important a factor is that on paper next year's quarterback crop is not quite in the same category as this one?
Yeah, that's a big talking or big sticking point, at least, that Howie Roseman used in his press conference. You know, they said they, part of the reason why they felt the urgency to trade up this year is because they've evaluated future quarterback classes and they haven't seen what, or they haven't liked what they've seen so much. Or even if they have, the Eagles, it's so rare for them to be picking in the top 10, I think only once in the last 15 years. So even if, you know, the, there are guys there available, they might not necessarily be available to the Eagles. And, you know, this was an opportunity where the Eagles could trade up this year. You know, we saw last year where Chip Kelly tried to trade up, and I think he offered a good deal to the Titans. I just don't think the Titans wanted to take it because they really love the quarterback. You know, if there's a team there and they really love the quarterback, there's just not going to be a price that you can get, you know, to steal that pick away from. And another thing to consider is that, you know, you look at a lot of the quarterbacks in the league, and, you know, you have a guys getting up there in age, like Tom Brady, Tony Romo, Drew Brees, and, you know, there's going to be a lot of these teams that pretty, a lot of them don't have successors in place. I mean, you look at Garoppolo in New England, and that's one, but a guy like Drew Brees, not necessarily a guy behind him, and these other teams like that, and you figure that, you know, there's going to be other teams looking for quarterbacks in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. When I look at it, I see Goff probably is the number one guy. I think Wentz is the guy that has the most upside of anybody. Believe it or not, the third guy I look at that I think if they get him is going to be Christian Hackenberg. Man, I've looked at Lynch. I've seen Connor Cook in person a couple of times. And guess what? Hackenberg's better than those three. But that's just a personal opinion as to I've only seen him throw Hackenberg, I've only seen him throw 12 to 15,000 footballs in 3 years. How about that?
I'll take your word on that one.
But yeah, I see, literally, that's, you know, because you think of all the practices. Hey, Brandon, thanks so much. Appreciate the time and the insight.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Brandon Gowden, BleedingGreenNation.com. Great to have him on board. Talk about what the Eagles have done. I completely agree with what the Eagles have done. Completely agree with it. I know it's expensive with picks 8, 77, 100, and a one next year. But I think they obviously know that Goff is going first overall. Wentz is the guy, and they worked out all these quarterbacks, and they know it. And Kevin's all excited because it's an FCS guy.
Listen, when was the last time an FCS guy went one, a two, let alone one? Which is, it's possible, but not likely. Well, I don't even know when the, if there was any.
I always laugh when I hear, he beat FBS teams. He beat Kansas.
I mean, look at that. I wouldn't say that.
I'm sorry, but, you know. No. We'll come back with, we'll talk more about this in a moment, about the quarterbacks, where they fall in all this in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Coming up, news at the top of the hour, the lead story will be the death of Prince, who died today at the age of 57. They were called to Paisley Park in Minnesota, to his studio there, where he was found unresponsive in an elevator. And he had been suffering from what they said was a severe case of the flu. He had canceled an appearance. He did make a brief appearance at a party last week where he played chopsticks on a purple Yamaha piano and showed off his new purple guitar. But he said that he can't play it at all these days, so he wasn't going to play the guitar that day. And he also told the crowd that night, wait a few days before you waste any prayers. Well, that was 5 days ago, and he passed away this morning, and they found him about 9:45 this morning in that elevator at the studio in Paisley Park in Minnesota. And they have not Hennepin County Sheriff's Office says that they'll do an autopsy. They performed CPR. They were not able to revive him, and Prince was pronounced dead at the scene. So there'll be more on that at the top of the hour. We've been talking about quarterbacks, and also next half hour we're going to talk about TV money, the $1.5 billion deal that evidently Fox is going to secure with the Big Ten Network, with the Big Ten, for Tier 1 rights to 50 basketball games and 25 football games. The Big Ten basketball coaches are very concerned about this contract. For the, you know, the Big Ten basketball coaches are not overly concerned with this part of the contract. They're extremely concerned about the next part of the contract, which is the other half. Does ESPN still maintain rights? Which they should. My understanding is ESPN's top out number on bidding may be about $150 million per year. They were paying $100. And that, like CBS in conjunction with Turner, ESPN might consider partnering with another entity to then boost to the number that they need to secure the rights. Now, we'll find out if that's true or not. Here's where the Big Ten basketball coaches are concerned. A little more concerned about it than the football coaches are. Football, I think people can find no matter what. The Big East on FS1 averaged about 96,000 viewers this past year. And remember, the Big East had the eventual national champion Villanova and had the fifth or sixth ranked team in the country, a number two seed in Xavier. They averaged 96,000 viewers a game on FS1. Do you know what the Big Ten averaged on ESPN this year for basketball? This is the average. 1.2 million viewers per. That's why they're concerned. That was the average. So that's why the Big Ten basketball coaches are very concerned that to make sure that ESPN is a part of the other half of this package somewhere. Because the exposure is invaluable. There may be cord cutting, which means that the viewers, which means that the number of subscribers to ESPN is down about 10% from 90 million down to about 81 million. But that's still 81 million households that can get ESPN. And on reputation alone, it's very important as to what ESPN, you know, what they bring to the table reputation-wise. For Fox, this is a move they have to make. They need to get some sort of signature programming on FS1. Live sports drives the engine. It's a six-year deal, not 12, at $1.5 billion. Now, they haven't signed anything yet. But we're going to talk money and sports. Kevin hates the money part.